All right, we're.
Yeah.
At all.
Said I won't pick on you.
We're going to get started. Some more people may trickle in, which is awesome, but let's just get started a little bit. We're here to talk about driving strategic differentiation through portfolio management and culture change. So we're going to talk about a whole lot of different things. But to really get us in the mood while these folks find seats, we want some thought starters. Everybody in this room, we presume, have been part of some type of a comprehensive portfolio management or project management delivery enhancement. So with a show of hands, I like this gentleman with a nice tie, how many felt that that improvement initiative, whatever it might have been, was successful in your organization? Hands? Okay. Not a whole lot of hands. How many felt that it really delivered change that sustained? Some initiatives deliver great change, and all of a sudden, a year later, everybody's reverted back. So some good, sustainable change? Okay. Looks like those who tried it did a good job.
And then, so how many of you felt that that initiative tried to do a little bit too much too soon? Bite off a little bit more than everybody's ready for. Yep, a lot of hands. And as part of that process, do you all take the time to reflect back on what was working and make adjustments as necessary? Yeah, good.
Okay, good. That takes us right to the objectives. Oh, awesome. So what we're going to talk about today is really overcoming some of the challenges that are apparent when you're doing portfolio execution enhancements, enabling the organization. The importance of building a roadmap to success and tying that to what you really want to achieve in your delivery enhancements. Related to that roadmap, what's the impact of change throughout the roadmap? Early on, it's something else. As you continue to evolve the long-range roadmap, those impact of changes is going to vary. The behavioral shifts, the thinking of the executives, the middle executives, the managers, the worker bees, all important to bring them along on their change journey with that roadmap. And most importantly, lessons learned, pausing, stopping, taking a look, what worked well, what didn't, what can we do differently, what perhaps did we miss. Very, very important to making sure that long-term evolution focus continues to evolve and is adjusted with the learnings of the organization.
So before we kind of get started talking about what we did in this initiative, we'll just give you a little bit of background about who we are. So my name is Rory Leslie. I'm Assistant Director of the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office at Health First. Health First is a not-for-profit health insurance company. We're focused mostly on Medicare and Medicaid, and we service primarily New York City as our service area. We've been in business about 20 years. We were established in 1993, so a little bit over 20 years at this point. And we've seen an extreme amount of change in the healthcare space in those 20 years that we've been in business. We've also gone through a huge amount of change as an organization as we move from a really small startup kind of organization to right now we have about 3,500 employees and service about 1 million members. So we've really grown extremely rapidly, specifically in the last 10 years. So we've had a lot of change that we have to deal with as an organization. My role at Health First has really been exciting for me. I've been there about a year, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved in developing a little bit of our roadmap for how we are going to transform the way that we manage portfolio and project management in the company and how we can really position ourselves for the next 20 years of our evolution.
And my name is Eric Foss. I work for P-Cube. We are a global management consultancy. We are focused on portfolio, program, project, and change management. We've been around for about 20 years. We do have a global focus. My role, I wear a couple hats. One is actually Director of Consulting Services for North America. I also drive our global evolution of our portfolio management practice. And what we do as a company is we partner with our clients long term. We'd like to really help them get some immediate benefits, but also build a foundation that they can continue to grow on long term. So we're there to help them immediately as well as long term. And again, we do that by tapping into a global base of consultants and associates. And as you see by the one quote there, a big focus is really getting those early wins to build momentum. So we worked with Mr. Merriwell and really accelerated some great benefits that allowed him to go to the board and continue focusing on portfolio management delivery as a company and the shifts that he was trying to accomplish. So really transforming an organization's capability across the board, portfolio, program, project, and change management. What we're going to talk about today to achieve those outstanding objectives we set is the building foundation, the initial phase. What did we do up front to put in place the start for great things? And then taking a look at what those great things were initially, what worked, what could have worked better, what things do we really need to focus on in terms of learnings, and then tying that into long-term capability evolution, the roadmap. How are we going to do this, pick up all the great stuff that worked, enhance it, perhaps find a different way if it didn't work as well as we wanted. Those types of things go into the roadmap to drive long-term capability evolution. So four key areas we'll be talking about today. And the first is really building the foundation. So without further ado, let's get into the content. Can everybody hear okay? Okay, one thing I do want to say here, Rory and I are very interested in to hear as we go through, if you have any questions, thoughts, observations, please let us know. We'll do our best to accept any thoughts or questions given the time constraints. But please don't hesitate. Raise your hand. And as I always like to say, we're not above bribery, so we have some additional tchotchkes we can throw at if you do happen to want to share one of your learnings or recommendations or questions. Okay? Sound good? Super. The approach to building a foundation, first and foremost, with Health First, PQ partnered with Health First at an enterprise level, which is very, very exciting, to really take a look across the entire enterprise about how portfolio management should be delivered, how Health First wanted to deliver it. And we did that through a very dedicated portfolio management work stream. We'll highlight some of the steps here. First and foremost is refining and putting in place a governance structure, an organization and process around portfolio governance. Very, very important. Working at the very highest levels, the CEO and her direct reports, as well as all the business executives leading their respective units. We worked with the C-level team to really define and validate those drivers and really prioritize them, pairwise comparison, weighting them. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes, but very, very important as the foundation for strategic alignment. The Portfolio and Project Delivery Office then took it running and worked with the different business units and business owners to put in place business cases for each proposed project as part of the intake process, which then went into the Portfolio Oversight Group, where they looked through annual planning exercises and offsite workshop to optimize the portfolio and recommend selection to the senior executive team. And we'll talk about each of these in a little more depth in a few minutes. But to understand the breadth of the scope, starting with the governance all the way through getting a good optimized selected portfolio for the year and having the organization and process in place to manage it. This was supported by three very important work streams. Change management was critical. Shifting the entire company to more of a portfolio management focused thinking. So starting at the very top, working all the way down, senior executive team, the portfolio oversight group, project managers, the portfolio and project delivery office, all the way down to the project resources need to understand what portfolio management is. So that was part of the behavioral and thinking shifts that was required in the change management work stream. We also enabled it with a solid process, portfolio and project management, as well as integration with technology delivery. Very important to have that process foundation, and that's going to continue to be elaborated on as we move forward, but you'll hear more about that in a few minutes also. And of course, enabling it with a solid technology, integrated picture end-to-end, idea all the way through the project completion.
So I think one of the things that we also just want to continue to highlight throughout this entire presentation is the importance of that change management work stream, because we really found that, obviously having all of these frameworks in place was critical to do any of the things that we accomplished, but we really tried to keep a focus on that communication and continuing to level set expectations with our entire group of stakeholders, not only those people that we were working with to implement this, but all of the people in the organization that we're eventually going to have to adopt and work within this framework. So just to understand a little bit about a little bit more about Health First and where we were coming from when we were looking to do this engagement with P-Cubed and develop this new framework. So we, as I had mentioned earlier, we had been facing a lot of change in the organization, not only as we grew from a very small to a small to medium-sized company, but also in the organization and the marketplace as a whole. So there were a lot of changes, as I'm sure all of you are aware of, in government-sponsored health insurance in the last 10 years specifically, and definitely more in the last couple of years. So we were preparing for those changes, as well as we recently acquired a regional health insurance company, which was going to increase our membership about 20%. So we had a lot of challenges on our plate, and we knew that we'd have to work a little bit differently in order to really meet them head on. So we found that we had a few business opportunities that we wanted to take on initially. So to start with, we wanted to make sure that we were selecting the right projects, that we were picking the projects that were actually going to give us the best benefit in the most efficient way. So we had to establish that decision-making framework so that we could make sure that those were the right projects in an objective way. Then we also had to establish a couple of these governance councils that we'll be talking about, those people in the organization that were going to have to take on ownership of the portfolio that we selected. We also used a lot of technology support to give us that visibility into our demand and capacity as an organization. This was something that was new and exciting for us, to be able to see at that portfolio level who do we have available to work on projects and what was the demand looking like for those projects in the coming year, and how do we balance that with the projects that are going to give us the most strategic value.
Okay. What we had to do is really not start from scratch, because there's all kinds of great stuff that was working well. So we wanted to leverage all the good things that were working, but put in place additional elements to help drive that perspective on portfolio management. I'm going to throw out a couple words that you're going to hear a lot today: transparency, accountability, objectivity, collaboration. Those are all very, very key into everything that we were doing. We wanted to create an organization that was accountable, decision-making could be handled, the processes were there, and they were using accurate, transparent, timely data to make those decisions. And that's a big, hairy, audacious goal. So the good thing about the approach is a lot of great stuff was put in place, and again, we paused and are learning, and the roadmap's going to be adjusted to take it forward with those learnings. But to begin with, we wanted to put in place a solid center of the governance organization, and that's really the portfolio oversight group. These are a group of senior executives who lead their business areas, and they come together in a collaborative way to really look at the proposed projects and make sure the right projects are considered for the right reason, and that they all agree on the decisions going forward. To accomplish that, we wanted to make sure we had the right level of process, rigor, and data for them to really be flexible and collaborative in their discussion. We didn't want to inundate them. So that was all put in place, and the POG was established. And with that in place, decision-making now could be driven down from the executive team and be handled by these senior-level leaders in the organization. It was a great place for them because they brought the breadth of the organization to bear in each of the meetings. That cross-functional view is so important when you're looking at an enterprise portfolio. And we'll talk a bit more about some of the decision criteria. But at the end of the day, these folks are responsible for making sure the portfolio is optimized and aligned to the strategic directives set by the senior executive team. That's their end state.
I think a big change for us was establishing that this cross-functional group was going to be involved in project decisions. I think, as Eric mentioned, a lot of our previous project decisions were made by the executive level team and, you know, the project office. So we really wanted to get that cross-functional perspective as we planned out our portfolio for the year, and make it something that those conversations are now being had at a level that they were never had before, in some of these VP level business owners really taking accountability and being involved in the project selection process.
Great. And to accomplish that, as I said, the right level of process had to be established. So we needed to make sure that these folks could sit in a room and compare apples to apples. So to do that, we had to put in place a framework that allowed the information to come to them in that way. We wanted to establish guidelines for classification. As a project was proposed, what was it? Was it an apple? Was it an orange? That wasn't good enough. We actually had to make sure that it was clear. Is this a discretionary project? Do we actually have to do this because of a compliance or business maintenance type of activity? Or can this be deferred for a year? And ideally, the more you defer, the more you can slide into that new capability work stream, which is really targeting your strategy. So the bigger that middle work stream is, the better off you're going to be in terms of driving your business forward. So that's the fundamental guiding principle of the project classification. And as each project comes into the pipeline, it's classified appropriately and validated. And then yet again by the POG during reviews, it's again looked at to make sure that it truly fits appropriately into one of those categories. And with that in place, you can run a mix on the portfolio to understand what you really have to do versus what is a discretionary thing. And a lot of this discussion can then be focused on the strategic impact of those new capability types of projects to maximize the strategic impact to Health First. Supporting that, of course, we talked about strategic alignment. Very, very important. That's why we do portfolio management. We need strategic business drivers. So again, wonderful opportunity to work with the CEO and her staff to really define those business drivers. The strategy existed. we worked with the C-staff to really define a small subset of strategic business drivers, and we got validation from each of the senior executives on those definitions, but we didn't stop there. We worked with them one-on-one to get the review of the definition. Then we actually worked through an exercise to prioritize them one-on-one with them. Basic pairwise comparison, very, very simple, but it provided great insight into how they see each of those strategies comparing to one another. Then the fun part is we brought them together and looked at the results of that, did some divergence planning, and figured out what really had to shift for them to be 100% aligned around the prioritization of that. And of course, that was put into Microsoft Project 2010, Project Server 2010, and allowed us to really do the strategic impact assessment for each component being proposed for the portfolio.
Yeah, this was an extreme improvement for us in terms of how we actually look at our projects and make comparisons. So I'm not sure if any of you are in the same scenario, but you know, there's oftentimes projects, it's difficult to have that apples-to-apples, really objective way to look at it and say, which project is actually driving us more towards our strategy as a company, not potentially one business area versus another, or potentially really impactful for a small subset, but maybe not when you look at it at the portfolio as a whole. So having these measures and those concrete numbers to be able to say, this is a 4 out of 5, this is a 3 out of 5, was really helpful for us in being able to have those conversations on that cross-functional level that we were never having before.
Yeah, and the 4 out of 5, 3 out of 5 is an evolving skill. So you see there that impact scales were defined for each strategic business driver. Very, very important, very, very difficult. So part of the learnings that we'll discuss is what needs to be adjusted there. First time out of the box, it was good, but not perfect. And the intent will be to leverage or evolve that, excuse me, to make it more fruitful in the future. Yes, sir.
That's a really good question. Did everybody hear that? Everybody can hear that? Okay. So we've sort of, I would say we evolved from having like a little bit less rigorous framework to a framework. But we definitely did have some of those projects that were in flight that, you know, it's kind of like too late to, you know, they're so far out of the gate. Do we stop them? Do we not? So what we actually asked everybody to do was we set a time frame on projects, and if they were going to be completing within, you know, the next month or two after we implemented this, we just let them continue. But the projects that we thought had more of a long-term life, we did ask them to go through the same exact process and enter all the same information as a brand new project would, to do the same level of, some of the things we'll talk about, but resource evaluation and inputting all of the strategic measures as well. So it did give us that perspective on some of our existing projects to say, would we have done this project if we had this system in place? Maybe not. So it gave us a little bit more leverage to have those conversations with the people owning them.
Yeah. Great question. From the time you started this process, given this, to get to your set of prioritized drivers, how long did it take your organization? And how would you characterize how difficult it was to get the C types to all agree to line up on?
I think you mean the actual process of defining the drivers itself? How long did that take?
Yeah, right down to where you're down to that last screen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think it was about two to three months.
A very aggressive timeline. So that's where having firm commitment from the CEO really helped. So despite their busy schedules, they carved out time. And the approach we took really optimized their time. So we didn't ask for hours and hours and hours on end. It was an hour here, an hour there. So we were able to actually work through it in a pretty accelerated timeline with very positive results, and the discussions that they had as a C-level team was just phenomenal to watch, and they were pretty happy with it at the end. I did want to mention one thing. Rory mentioned objectivity. I mentioned transparency, and I use that term a lot. I probably overuse it, so you know, a little drinking game. Every time Eric says transparency, have a shot of coffee or whatever, your water. This is a real valuable view, the transparency of the assessment of each component. So in workshops with the executives, you can call up Project Server and just put it on the screen and show them how each project very specifically hits each strategy. And that removes any guesswork, purely objective, very transparent. I've worked with organizations that do some level of strategic alignment, but it's very high level, sort of nebulous. You don't really know how much. and or how little a project impacts a strategy. And here you can balance that, and it gives the executives, the oversight group, a chance to be an oversight group. They can say, I don't agree with that. I think we need to adjust it this way. And then that can go back to the business owner, and then the discussion starts. So good collaboration, good transparency, good decision making. But that visibility is just so key, so they know precisely what's going into every strategic value computation, because that's ultimately what's going to drive their business decisions. And this is all downloadable, too, by the way. I see somebody taking pictures. You're more than welcome to take pictures of the screen, but I think all these are accessible after if you want to save your, I guess you don't have to worry about saving film anymore, but.
It's memory space.
Yes. So all that great data needs to come in some way, shape, or form. So the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office actually refined the business case template to collect a whole bunch of information quite a bit earlier than normal people were used to. Cost, resources, benefits, timing, risks, not just execution risk, but what happens if you don't do this project? Is the business going to crumble? So the risk of not doing a project has to be quantified to a certain level, so it can support the decision of should it be forced in, as I said in that classification. Critical dependency is very key. This is cross-functional enterprise level. So that doesn't happen just like that. You can't just give somebody a complex template. So the PPDO, the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office, became a coach, a mentor, and internal expertise was used to validate that information. And over time, that skill will be built up in the business owners and folks filling this out, but first time, it's a learning, growing experience, so there has to be a lot of patience, and it really allowed the PPDO to position themselves as thought leaders in this area, and will continue to provide that opportunity to them.
Yeah, I think when it comes to having patience, this was a challenge to get this information put in this template by all of our project submitters, who in general were, you know, leaders in the business areas, and so they had never been required to put all of this information together at the start of a project. So this was definitely a huge lift for them and for us as coaches to them. But I think it was one of the most valuable things that we could have done in terms of getting our portfolio to a manageable place. Because not only was, I think it's good that it was difficult, because some people that had certain project ideas that maybe weren't as strong didn't feel that they wanted to go through the whole process of submitting a business case. So, you know, we got less project submissions that were on the weaker side than maybe would have gone in a previous year, where things that weren't well thought out, or they just weren't ready to put their thoughts down to paper yet. We said, just come back next year when you're ready and you've thought it through. And it also just gave us a better head start when we actually began to start the project. So a lot of, in our previous framework, a lot of the work that we'd been asking the sponsors to do in the business cases was done by the project management team as they got into projects and started initiating the projects. So this helped them get a little bit more of a head start, because a lot of the information was already available to them and had already been thought through. So there were a lot of benefits to the difficulty.
Most definitely. And what PCube really brought, just a second, what PCube really brought to this relationship was a perspective around that challenge. As you require more and more information to be brought earlier in the process, it is a little painful by some, perceived to be painful. You need to recognize as an organization that an early on estimate is not going to be the same as after detailed planning and then after detailed requirements, all that great, all the way down to definitive that we all know and love. So it's very important to get everybody understanding what this really is. It's a rough order of magnitude. It's going to change, but at least it gives some groundwork for initial decision making, and then the ongoing oversight will continue to keep an eye on that and see the estimates come down to the nice definitive level that we all know and love and want and hope for. So at this point, we have a framework in place from a project classification. We have a strategic driver framework in place with impact scales. We have the senior executive team very, very engaged leading this. We have the portfolio oversight group established and operating, and we have the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office enhancing their capabilities and reach across the organization as part of that. So it's very important positioning of all those organizations as drivers in this. So when they do request information, it's not put on the back burner. It's very, very important.
Want to get that question?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, question.
You answered 80% of it.
Good. What was the specific question? I'm sorry.
What happens when you actually get the project initiation and that order of magnitude is way off?
So we have a process by which we kind of continually update our business cases. So the idea is that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things that come out during your initiating and planning phases where you're going to be getting more information. Maybe it's bigger than you thought. Maybe it's smaller than you thought. Most of the times it's bigger than you thought. But you know, so what we do then is we'll talk a little bit more kind of the cadence that we do this on an ongoing basis. But we don't just make a one portfolio selection and then just let it go. It's an ongoing review process that happens monthly at this point. So the idea would be as those things change, we take it back in, continue to bump it up against the rest of the portfolio and understand, do we still have the capacity to do this? Or is this something that potentially there's something more strategically valuable that's a little bit more efficient to do, and we'll focus on that instead. So
it also drives a very important behavior, which is the business case isn't just shelfware. I've worked with a lot of companies over my years as a consultant. We won't talk about how many years. But a lot of times the business case comes into the project manager when the project's selected and they begin doing their great initiating stuff. And the business case goes on a shared drive someplace and it never gets touched again. But this environment is very evolutionary. So the business case is always there supporting the project. So when the numbers change, it still needs to make sense in the business case. And the POG is there, the Portfolio Oversight Group, to really reinforce that, to make sure there's that ongoing review of, does this really make sense? It's three times more expensive than we thought. Is the value there, the quantified benefits, does it justify it? That's the behavior that this whole initiative is really shooting for in the long term, and we're getting there one step at a time.
All right, so after we've collected all this information in the business cases, the way that we handle our first round of portfolio selection was through a workshop. So this was a two-day workshop that brought together our POG members, our Portfolio Oversight Group members. And these are all, you know, VP-level senior people, so this was a big time commitment for them. And it definitely was a challenge to schedule, but we ended up having a two-day workshop all day where we really went through and did a deep dive into all of the projects that were submitted. So this was definitely not a, just taking a glance, more of a cursory review. This was a really detailed look at every single project, and it required a lot of time and effort from our VPs that were involved. But I think that we really saw an evolution from day one to day two of this workshop. Day one, people were a little bit more unsure of how to talk about projects. They really just hadn't evolved that sort of terminology to figure out, is this a good idea, is this a bad idea? Sometimes people were actually submitting, that the people who had submitted the projects were part of the POG. So there was a little bit of hesitancy to push back on certain things or challenge certain ideas. Day two was totally different, though. We definitely got to the point where we knew we had a finite window to make this decision, and people started pushing back the way that normally our project office had been pushing back to say, are you sure about that timing? Are you sure about those resources? Don't you need, you know, potentially this or that? Is there a risk that you're not thinking of here? Is there a potential, are these benefits really going to be as much as you say they are? So we started to have great conversations around portfolio and project level, things that we hadn't discussed previously. So it was a really exciting discussion with that group that led to us being able to select the projects that we felt not only gave us the most strategic value, but fit within our capability to deliver as an organization.
I think we had a couple questions over here real quick.
Yeah.
Sure. So do you guys hear that question? How many projects were there? How much time did we prepare? And where did we put the data while we were collecting it? So there were, I think, about 80 business cases submitted originally. So there were about 80 to go through for everybody. Time to prepare, I believe there was about a month between the final round of the business case to when we actually had our meeting. So the idea was everybody would do their homework in advance and read them through. That happened to, you know, varying degrees. And so we did a lot of review in the meeting as well. And then in terms of storing it as we went through the process, in our initial phase, these were really housed in like an Excel document format. But something that we'll talk about a little bit in terms of our evolution is looking to automate that a little bit more using SharePoint.
And did you have a question? I thought, sorry, hang on.
Okay. Exactly the same. Perfect.
Okay, so to get ready for the workshop, we have all this great information coming in through business cases. The PPDO is looking at it and bringing it together, populating Project Server 2010 with the critical data required. A lot of great demand, so now we know what's required by all these projects. What we don't yet know is what the capacity of the organization is. So we worked with the business leaders in an iterative fashion to really reach out to them and figure out what this resource pool, this infamous enterprise resource pool, really looks like. Always a very challenging thing. All the business leaders had a great handle on what they were doing, and it was just bringing them into a slightly different type of thinking around allocation of resources to project work or not.
Yeah, and this was something that was, again, exciting to see the data that represents the way that you've been feeling about the organization. So we definitely felt that we'd been feeling for a long time. Maybe we're just doing too much. Maybe we don't have the people that we need to do all of these projects. But this was a great way for us to actually look at that data, again, in an objective way and see that, you know, we'd had a certain number of projects and estimates for how many resources that was going to use, and then we had a good handle on how many we actually have available in the organization. So this was really exciting for us. We could see that the places we thought we were short were in fact the places we were short, and then we had all these great views of by project, by over time, by different types of resources that we'd never been able to get to before.
Was all this process work done at the same time as an implementation of Project Server, or was Project Server already installed and being used, and this is just process work on top of it?
Process work actually came first, which is something that we felt really strongly about. So we did put in a lot of the governance structure in the beginning and kind of got people aligned on what we were actually trying to accomplish and all the different frameworks, but we did a kind of a parallel implementation of all the software, and then once we'd actually selected the portfolio was when we began kind of rolling out the technology. So technology was second for us.
Yes, yeah. One more question.
On which level do you capture the resource data? Was it FTE count or competency group, the generic roles?
Yeah.
Or were you in dialogue with the resource managers about so many persons for project, so many persons for maintenance, etc.? Which level do you?
Sort of at both levels. We had a lot of detailed conversations with the people in the different business units to say, okay, what types of people do you have that work on projects? So getting to a higher level grouping of roles, as well as then saying, okay, do they work full-time on projects? Do they work, are they, you know, in an IS organization, are they working 40% of their time on maintenance and 60% of their time on projects, or vice versa? So we did both levels, and then we inputted the data on a by-person level. So in a named resource level, we have all the data of, you know, exactly how much time they are expected to work on projects or have available for projects. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I said a lot of resource management at multiple levels.
Was that just Excel at first?
No, that was actually through Project Server.
Okay. Yeah. Resource plans?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we use the resource plans. And we could talk. We'll talk more a little bit about the mechanics of how we went to do that.
Did you use skills at all? Did you input skills into this?
We did input them. We're not really leveraging them as much as we probably will in the future at this point. But we're basically focusing it on roles, and the roles are kind of specific to skills currently. So, all right. So then we had our final portfolio approval. So this was the outcome of all of our two-day workshops. We also had some additional workshops that we needed to do in our first year, just because we had a lot of great discussion, as Eric had said, around the information that was submitted. In some cases, we kind of asked the submitter to go back and rethink what they had submitted, or we had questions, or challenged them to put a little bit more detail. So once that additional detail was gathered, we went back and had some follow-up meetings. And once we'd done that, we felt like the POG felt that they had a good balanced portfolio that we felt confident we could actually achieve with the resources that we have in our systems, and we took it to our senior leadership for their final approval to move forward.
Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about outcomes. All that great work produced some really good stuff, and Rory's going to walk us through some of those great things.
So in terms of how the final portfolio looked, I know some people were asking about how many projects, things like that. So this is a little bit of a graph of before and after. So we started with about 80 business cases. By the time we actually got to the workshop, we turned out about 58 business cases went into that workshop. And you can see that we have finally approved only about 26. So this was a great step for us as an organization in being able to say that we're deferring, you know, almost half of the projects that we'd received. So the other interesting thing for us was that we, as a company, work in a highly regulated environment and often think that most of our portfolio of work is dedicated to regulatory requirements and things like that. But we actually saw that we did have a good percentage of our regulatory projects, but we were also able to dedicate a large percentage to new capability projects, which was exciting for us and which makes sense given the kind of changing environment that we're in right now and needing to kind of keep up with where the marketplace is going. But this was an interesting outcome for us because we assumed it would be 90% regulatory. So. Yeah, good question.
I know one of the big challenges in portfolio optimization is all those infrastructure type projects because they don't get necessarily the bigger value. They're more like on the sustain side, but they still consume a lot of capital dollars and you still have to get them done. So I'm very surprised to see that you end up having like such a small number at the end. So
yeah. Well, I think we definitely in the past we had kind of always done all of those sustain projects that are, you know, the upgrades and the maintenance and all those different things every year, no matter what. And this year we actually, or the year that we did this portfolio last year, we had determined that we really take a look at them for the first time to say, do we need to do this upgrade? Is this a critical upgrade for this year? Can it wait till next year? So it was one of those things that we tried to make room for more of these new capability projects just to make sure that we had that strategic positioning that we were looking for. But we did, you know, identify that because we'd been going along and doing all of the sustained projects on an ongoing basis every year, we could defer some of those projects to the next year without any negative impact.
And that's where the classification framework and the definition up front is so critical, because that allows the right discussions to occur. What's really deferrable? What's going to hurt the business if you defer it too much? And eventually it'll get to a point where you absolutely have to do it, but you don't want to do it if you don't have to. Oops, sorry.
So again, you know, one of our main criteria in doing this entire transformation was really to make sure that we were going to be able to position ourselves for success and give ourselves the leeway to do some of those projects that were going to keep us, you know, at the forefront of the marketplace, but as well being confident that the ones that we did select, we were able to deliver on time and with quality. So I think we achieved our objectives in terms of the portfolio that we selected, being able to take half of those projects off of the table so that we could focus on the ones that we felt were going to drive the most value to the organization. So that was a big step for us, and it was definitely provided a lot of value for the organization over the year, because we could continue to look at all of the projects that we were doing and make sure that we were continuing to get the value that we were expecting from those projects.
And a key thing for positioning for success, the portfolio is one thing, but the organization now is transparent. The data is right there. It's objective. They have the right level of decision making. So all that great stuff was just enhanced. A lot of good people in the organization. Now they have an organization and process to support all this good decision making. And most importantly, they have the collaboration necessary to evolve. And we'll talk a bit more about that. What's working well, what's not, on an ongoing basis, tweaking how they work together. The dynamics between the three organizations is critical, the PPDO, the oversight group, and the senior executive team. And it's working really well, and they're continuing to evolve that.
So I think you sort of mentioned, like, when you selected the portfolio, so that sort of indicates it's like an annual process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our process is an annual process, but it is monthly reviewed. So as those new things come in, we can, you know, we get a new business case for them. We review against the rest of the portfolio and determine, is this something that we can add? Is there something else that can come off? So there's definitely shifts, you know, ongoing throughout the year. But we try to at least get the best idea we can at the beginning of all the things that people know are on the horizon coming in. Yes.
How were you able to sort of instill that discipline?
Did everybody hear that question? How do you instill the discipline to keep the data up to date?
I mean, it's definitely an ongoing process. It's something that we did, you know, pretty well last year, and something that we're hoping to do even better this year, which is, you know, tying that into our change management process within projects to say when your change is at a certain threshold, it requires that update to the business case, which then requires a review with the POG. So we've put in some of those thresholds and trigger points to say that if your scope or whatever you have in your project is changing, you might need to update the business case at a certain point. It's not every single tiny shift.
Okay, one more question, then we'll move on. The lady in the nice green shirt.
Yeah. How is that related to the budget process, to the financial projects? How do you actually get budget to run these processes?
Well, that's why.
Projects.
Yeah. That's definitely why we try to do it on an annual basis, so that we can get ahead of that budget cycle to say, okay, here's the projects that we know of. We can put those in the budget, and then as projects come in, it becomes a matter of looking at what's been budgeted already and just determining if shifts need to be made to deprioritize something that was previously approved because it made sense at the time, and now something else has come in that's more of a high priority. So, want to keep going because
yeah, we'll keep going.
We're a little short on time.
Running short on time. So, real quick, transitioning to operations. So, the first year, a lot of great stuff was refined and elaborated and put in place that needed to be transitioned over. The Portfolio and Project Delivery Office was the owner of all that. So, in initial rollout, process training was conducted on the new portfolio management methodology, the refined PM methodology that was transitioned to the PPDO for ongoing delivery as well as ongoing evolution. As the process is elaborated, as things change, they can continue to update the methodology and the training that goes along with that. Same with technology training. Initially, it required both fundamental Microsoft project training to get those skills, and that's an evolving skill, of course, we all know, very complex. And also Project Server, how does that apply? Now I'm working in a server environment. Oh my goodness, if I hit this submit, oh geez. So all that has to happen to make sure that the people have the right discipline not to blow up the data and they keep their information up to date. So the PPDO owns that, working with IT, of course, as necessary. And then, of course, the Portfolio Oversight Group is new. It's established, it's doing great things, and they're learning and figuring out how they want to evolve going forward within that dynamic between them and the PPDO and the senior executive team. And the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office, in this new reinforced role of driving the portfolio, has a lot of great things to do and is doing wonderful stuff, but continuing to make sure they're positioned well in the organization to do that effectively. And most importantly at the bottom, now with that organization in place, there's clear issue resolution. Something pops up, the PPDO can escalate it to the right level and get quick resolution of that issue. And then finally, lessons learned.
Everybody's favorite part. So, you know, as I mentioned, the first year that we did this was 2013. So we're now in our second cycle for our 2014 portfolio year. We have an approved portfolio for this year, following a very similar process. So we wanted to look at what went well. I'm not going to go through every single thing on this slide, but I think one of the highlights was the communication. So I think we've talked about it a couple of times. We have cross-functional business leaders engaged in conversations about portfolio management. That has been a big change for us, a big improvement for us. We're having conversations at different levels and an ongoing basis. We have a common lexicon to have those conversations, and it's, you know, trickled down from VP level all the way to everybody that works on projects. So that's been a huge improvement for us, and I think that's one of the really critical things for us moving forward, is that we have set that foundation of common language, common terms, and an understanding of why we're doing this entire process and what the benefit is to the organization. And that goes back also to the organizational awareness of the portfolio management process. So from everyone from our senior executives to the team members on the projects, they understand what we're trying to accomplish, why we're doing this, and that, you know, all of the initiatives that they're working on are part of this greater strategic portfolio that was selected that's really helping to drive the business forward.
And again, that positioning for success, the communication seems like something minor, but we all know how critical it is. You get people in a room and they talk past each other. And with that common lexicon, understanding, interpretation, it's really exciting to see the great conversations that can occur.
So we identified a lot of things that went well. We also identified some additional opportunities, both for our initial implementation and things that we're continuing to look at this year. So we definitely, you cannot overemphasize the change management implications of doing something like this. We did a great job of continuing to communicate with our key stakeholders. I think we definitely can improve our communication to all levels of the organization. I think that this is something that we're continuing to look at this year is how do we make sure that everybody understands their role and how they impact the portfolio and make sure that they're really clear on that. Also, setting up what does success look like? So we implemented all these frameworks and we have this process that's ongoing, but giving ourselves those reasonable expectations for year one, what should the portfolio look like? What should this process look like? What's success? Because we're definitely not going to have a complete transformation in 1 year. It's an ongoing process. So understanding for us, and this is something we're continuing to look at, what are our key milestones that we feel like we need to be hitting to make sure that we're on track for that full transformation that we'd like to make?
When you talk about change management,
yes. Change management, yeah, within the organization, not change management within a project. Yeah.
Good. Good question. Good clarification. Thank you.
So, again, since we're in our second year, we have seen a lot of this translate into shifting mindsets and behaviors. We definitely have more of a portfolio view versus project view. Previously, it was all about an individual project or a project by, you know, department-specific initiatives, and now we have that more global sense of all the things that we're doing are all moving the company forward together and were chosen for a reason because of their strategic value to the company. We've also got a lot more ownership within the organization on project success and outcomes. So before it was kind of a project office owner-owned role, and it was kind of being pushed specifically from that direction, and now it's something that we're seeing the organization as a whole take more accountability for, which has been a huge improvement as well. And with our improved data quality, we can be driving towards that focus on stronger KPIs and outcomes and really tying projects back to what they set out to achieve at the beginning and, sticking within those budgeted resources and timeframes that they had initially committed to. It's much easier for us to see that at a portfolio level using our new tool set.
So is that for the portfolio or the after effect, like the years hence, the project has been delivered and now tracking the benefits KPI? Just doing it for the delivery?
No, for the delivery and for the benefits of, it was going to, save us X dollars or, so looking at it, tracking it over time as well. But, having strong metrics around delivery is number one, and then looking at, okay, now that we've committed to these specific benefits, we have a great way to centralize that and see if we're actually achieving those.
And that process begins early on in the business case, asking people to look at the outcomes and quantify them in business mm-hmm. benefits terms, and then tracking that all the way through realization, going back to the business owner and saying, did you actually achieve that? Which occurs after the project completes, of course. There needs to be a time for that to get embedded. But that's all part of the business focus of the portfolio to really drive the strategy. It's in the process and yeah. Using the tool to support that, yes.
Yeah, we use the data from the tool to support the process after the fact.
Okay, last section, driving capability evolution. So what we want to do now is looking forward. We've got some great successes, some great foundation in place, a lot of folks working really well together to understand how they want to evolve going forward. So we want to put that into a roadmap. And what we always recommend is a holistic roadmap looking across the board, not just technology, not just process. You got to bring them all together in a cohesive way because they all support one another. So at the strategy level, as Rory mentioned a couple times today, is strategic drivers in place, but they're going to evolve. We need to refine those. We need to validate those. Make sure they're really fit for purpose based on the new learnings of the organization, the new strategy, the new priorities. And with that, also the impact scales, continuing to evolve those so they're getting the right measurement of strategic impact that can be then reviewed by the portfolio oversight group. Supporting that is just the organization's there, it's doing great things, but continuing to learn as an organization, how does the POG want to work with the PPDO, the Portfolio and Project Delivery Office, and how do they want to bring the senior executive in, team in. There's a lot of organizational dynamics that will continue to be worked out based on the preferences of the folks in these groups, the executives and the leaders of the PPDO. And then, of course, governance. What is the right cadence? Ongoing cadence is very important. What does that really look like? There's a cadence in place. Is that right? Are the meetings effective? Is the agenda and outcome of those meetings what the organization needs them to be? And is the technology giving them the right information in the right format so they can continue to provide that annual or regular oversight as well as the annual oversight? Working around the horn there, people and process, very, very important. So the portfolio management lifecycle, project management lifecycle is in place. Going forward, it's going to be elaborated on based on priority, delivery priorities of the organization. So with that, of course, comes ongoing coaching and training to bring the people along with any evolution made in the process. Really focusing on leveraging all the great data that's going to be available, taking those actuals, learning from them in project planning, learning from them in delivery determination, just a second on the question. And really making things just much more effective in the project lifecycle itself based on actuals, so we don't repeat perhaps things that didn't quite go as well as we wanted them to in the past. And we learn from delivery approaches that have worked well. And heuristically, what is the right estimate? So those ROMs, somebody brought up a ROM being way off, is a little bit closer. And then bottom line is very challenging, and it's not going to happen overnight, is continue to drive portfolio thinking out to the masses. It's great momentum right now at the senior executive level, the executive level, even down to portfolio and project delivery office leadership and the PMs, but continue to drive that to all the resources that work on projects and all the people, the technical owners, those types of folks, really need to understand and start thinking portfolio. And there's a question we have real quick.
I was just wondering if you have been able, as part of your lessons learned, to show that there's been cost savings by doing this. Or is it too early? Because what I've seen in organizations is that usually after the first year or so, there's like you lose the momentum, and the first thing to go in an organization is process. So
right.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, after year one, it's a little too early for us. But I think that what we're trying to focus on for the future is putting those measures in place so that we can continue to reinforce the value that we're getting out of this process and all of these frameworks. Because I think, you know, right now the outcomes have really been around we're doing less projects, we're focusing on delivering the ones that we've chosen with quality and delivering them, you know, with good delivery practices. But in our next year, we're definitely looking to focus on what the benefits of the projects that we've selected have actually given us, and also, you know, potentially any efficiency savings that we've seen by focusing our portfolio.
And not to minimize what you just said, that's huge. Even the first optimization effort, quite a few projects were not selected. So we always like to say you want to do the right projects and then do them right. So they were able to streamline down to just the right projects, and that's a significant savings from a tangible financial type of cost perspective. But also the intangible churn of the organization is minimized because now people aren't scattered and fragmented as much, which is really the ultimate. You want people focused. So there's a lot of tangible and intangibles that will continue to be tracked. And technology, of course, underpinning all this is a very nice integrated technology, which makes it all possible. Again, the transparency of data through Project Server, the real-time ability to look at that information and modify it and adjust the portfolio, do what-ifs for various criteria, sit in the room with the portfolio oversight group and balance their keen business perspective into the portfolio decision-making. And that's going to be even improved further. The priorities right now are looking like business case automation, taking that Excel template, putting it in the technology to make things even more streamlined, to get data into the pipeline, putting more reports in front of executives and teams, giving them the dashboards, get information at their fingertips. And then timesheet capabilities. Actuals are very important. So we want to make sure we're capturing what people are really working on. And then, of course, lessons learned. We talked a couple times about extracting data from the organization, and the more the lessons learned can be embedded into the way people work and the data is extractable and reusable, it's going to be great for heuristic, if I could say it, project planning and estimating, as well as learning from past mistakes and past successes. And then key takeaways.
All right, so our big key takeaways, I think you probably heard us mention them a bunch of times. We'll just reiterate them here because we think they're so important. number one, engage the organization. Make sure that you have a strong, you know, advocate or two or three in your corner as you take on a change like this, because it definitely requires ongoing reinforcement and consistent support in order to continue to drive it. It's you know, it's challenging for people. It's more work than they were doing before. So in order to get them to continue to participate at that level and see the benefits, you know, you have to have those vocal and visible champions. And managing the change, again, like continue to understand where the pockets of people that don't really know what you're doing are and communicate to them. Make sure that you continue to reevaluate your change management strategy. If something's not working, change it up, because really it's all about listening to the organization and adjusting accordingly.
And building on that, to effectively manage change, it's always great to understand the context of that change. What are you asking people to do differently, and why, and how does that fit into the bigger picture and that road towards the big, hairy, audacious goal that Health First wants to achieve? So the more you can understand that roadmap and where you're taking the organization, the more you can really help those incremental behavioral shifts and thinking shifts and process changes and technology changes take root, because they understand that they're not being, you know, spent in a little zigzag pattern. It's going towards something real, and each little place is an incremental step. And that helps by maintaining the holistic perspective. Technology is critically important. You have to have the processing capability to support that. Without the technology, the processing capability will also be stuck. It can only go so far. So working holistically around that, the six elements that we talked about, to really make sure you're bringing home the organizational capability across the board, and then tying that to what the organization really needs to achieve from a business perspective.
And last but not least, again, learn and grow. So look back at what worked. What we are doing right now is really reevaluating where we are, where we think we should be, where we're trying to go to next, and we're trying to listen to the organization and take that feedback and be flexible with our approach. So we had a plan for how we wanted to roll things out. We think that we were very successful in that rollout, and now it's about continuing to adjust based on the changes that have gone on even in the last year, and what were the feedback that we're hearing from our end customers. Because at the end of the day, if it doesn't work for the organization, the best process in the world is not going to be as beneficial as it could be. So.
And we have a few minutes for questions. We have I have a little after, quarter after. So lots of great questions. Thank you so much during the presentation for the great questions and input. Any questions as we close out? We have a few minutes to talk.
Are you tracking resources at the enterprise level? You're doing demand and capacity analysis against all resources in your entire organization?
All resources that work on projects. So not all of our staff is involved in projects, but what the ones that we've identified that do work on in whatever capacity, we are tracking demand for them in the business case process, as well as the capacity through the work with the business units.
And how do you handle the non-project capacity, that those resources that are split?
Mm-hmm.
The resource managers in our organization want to see the full picture.
Yeah.
Can they get the full picture?
Well, right now we can. The way that we're handling it is we're essentially carving out whatever that piece is that we feel they're dedicated to other work. So, for example, somebody might be only 60% allocated to project work, so that's going to be their max capacity. In terms of that view of what they're doing with the other 40%, at this point, that's not something we're tracking in our systems.
We had a question right here, sir.
In order to support this?
Yeah.
Everybody hear that? What dedicated resources did we use to support this from the portfolio office? In terms of dedicated resources, it was mostly a lot of the people like me. Oh, geez. People like me, the assistant director. There's three assistant directors in our department, so we're heavily involved in supporting the process. We also worked heavily with P-Cubed in order to implement the frameworks and set us up with the path of kind of the POG meetings and everything like that. And so now on an ongoing basis, it's managed through the management in our department. So none.
Yes, sir. Did everybody hear that? Quantification rules for cost and benefits?
Yeah, I mean, this has definitely been something that's been a challenge for everybody. We did put some rules and guidelines in terms of, you know, what can really be expected to, if we're, you know, expanding a certain product line or something like that, putting in those numbers that they can use so that everybody's using apples to apples in terms of what the benefits are. But it's an ongoing process that we're continuing to evolve. Most of the time, we just basically ask them to give us how they got to those numbers, right? So what is their justification for the cost and the benefits that they're believing that they'll drive? And then we can evaluate that with the POG group.
And what we found working is a great question. And the first step is getting people to really begin to understand the quantifiable outcomes of their project that support the strategy. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning step towards shifting their thinking to a portfolio-focused type of mindset. Right. And that with that, then, you know, whatever we can get first time around, but continue to evolve that through consistent metrics, consistent criteria will be an evolutionary step down the road.
Yeah, and our first round of coming up with a criteria for what is the most impact you can have on a business driver versus like a 5 versus a 0, we used our subject matter experts within our company to say, if our driver is X, what would you expect to see as an extreme impact on that? And they gave us their best guess. We found in our second year that those were maybe a little high, for one project to achieve. So we revisited with them and had them come back and say, what is something that is achievable, but also, you know, give us that reach capacity to say there could be a project that's going to have this extreme impact on, you know, a certain financial measure or whatever it might be. And we want to give that whole range.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you will tend to see a lot of projects coming up with a very high proposed benefits mm-hmm. because they're not being held accountable.
Right.
You know that's going to push that project to the top. And so you start making them accountable and say, if you're going to claim $1 million benefits, I'm going to put that in the book right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization needs to be positioned to support that. So the POG with the executives and the direct line to the senior executive team is the absolute right positioning to ensure that accountability when the organization is ready to roll into that. But that's a big step. Good point, Claude. Yes, sir.
When you were determining your weighting of your business drivers, what process did you use to harmonize the differences of opinions amongst the managers?
We really set up a couple of key owners on each driver. So there wasn't a ton of, you know, a group consensus needed in order to identify the different levels of driver impact. But we basically used the POG group and the other subject matter experts.
The pairwise was actually a facilitated session. So we started with the senior executive team and we kicked off the whole process and the approach. And then we worked independently to really come up with draft drivers and vetted those one-on-one with a definition. And we got their one-on-one prioritization. And then we brought it together in a facilitated session. So we displayed the results of the one-on-one and flagged areas where there was a big divergence and worked through those and got some compromise. So at the end of that session, everybody could walk out 100% committed to supporting that prioritization for that point in time. And what we always recommend is each year review them. You probably don't want your drivers to change drastically every year, but the prioritization certainly might, based on the needs of the organization, priorities of the market, those types of things. So it allows the organization to continue driving towards strategy, but adjust for yearly priorities. But most definitely a very interesting and exciting facilitated session with some great discussion. The folks were just absolutely amazing to work with. The CEO and her staff, they were phenomenal. It was great to, their keenness in the business and ability to work together was a real treat to be part of.
During the POG meetings that you hold, at what point do you actually pull up the project data on 2010?
We generally do a lot of the analysis in advance and present sort of graphical representations of the data for them. So what we'll do is we'll display things like demand by department, demand versus capacity, deficits, and we start to look at those things, and then we also start to look at then the high demand, low strategic driver value projects, and we give them a bunch of different types of slices and dices of the data so that they can use them effectively in the meeting. So we do a lot of the information gathering in advance and prepare a presentation for them.
We have a couple more minutes for questions, but we're losing people. I just wanted to reinforce that please go ahead and fill out evaluations of the session. Hopefully you enjoyed your time here, so I wanted to urge folks to go do that. And also, if there's any additional questions after this and you want to talk more, Rory's going to be at the PQ booth for a little while if you want to stop by and chat and say hello. I just wanted to get that out. Now we can take some more questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the challenges that every organization will probably face is that not everybody wants to follow the process, or some people that might feel like, oh, the process is not for me. So, you know, we encounter challenges with that. And again, it goes back to having those vocal, visible champions and as high in the organization as you can get them to continue to reinforce their, you know, this is a business imperative for us to do. It's not optional. So I think the more that we continue to reinforce that you cannot get a project done unless you follow the process, that helped us in that aspect. And then I think just in terms of ongoing challenges, it's really just been about providing or having them experience some of the issues if they don't follow the process, right? So it's more about, okay, here's all of the other teams that have done all the work and gone through and working on a project this way, compare that to a project maybe last year that we did, and you know the benefits of having that information, that oversight, are really kind of apparent to them at that point.
Just to follow up,
yeah.
You know, were you able to leverage PQ, you know, in helping you sort of fight that battle with the executives and kind of change that culture?
You know, I think at that point we were kind of owning that ourselves, you know, just to say that we had set up key people in the organization. I think definitely PQ helped us with that in the upfront, getting all of the stakeholders aligned. But everybody was on board right at the beginning, and then it's kind of as the process goes along where people start to slide back into whatever they were doing before. So at that point, that was really on us as a portfolio and project delivery office. And in our POG meetings and things like that, we really leaned on our POG group to be those additional voices to continue to drive people to follow the process and understand the importance of the framework we're trying to set up.
And I think what helped drive that, going back all the way to day one, the first time we met with the senior executive team and kicked off the recommended approach, helping them understand all these pieces that we talked about today have very specific purposes in the framework. And, you know, of course, they had to understand that and understand that it's going to take some time and effort organizationally, but this is what you're going to get. So once we were able to walk them through the piece parts that need to be developed and why, how they work together and all that great stuff, they were really on board and they were able to really support it, and it trickled down. So once you have that executive support, it's not easy the rest of the way, but at least you have that to fall back on. And then the VPs pick up and run with it, and you can deal with pockets of resistance as necessary. But a big comprehensive change strategy across the board, leveraging the senior executive team commitment and sponsorship, is just very, very beneficial. One more question, I think. Okay, maybe two. The person with the mic first, and then.
Where in your organization does your portfolio office sit? So is it in IT, finance?
No, we're actually in sort of a unique department called the Strategy Management and Implementation Department, which is consists of also our process improvement. And we have a dedicated testing office group as well that assists with user testing. So we sort of fall, we're not in the IT group, and we fall under that sort of operational side of the business. Our VP reports directly to the COO.
And one other quick question.
Yeah.
Do you have a threshold for the projects, cost or risk, or just everything? Okay.
Of what is a project?
And what goes through this process?
Yeah, we did. We developed it through this process, and we have kind of a cost threshold, a level of complexity threshold, which is defined by the number of departments that are involved, and also an effort threshold.
Okay. And one last question, and then we'll need to wrap up so we don't get escorted out by security.
When it came to selecting the tool Project Server for your organization, what was the one determining factor or several determining factors that you used? Because I'm my company, our company, as an organization, we use Clarity, and just the R&D department uses Project Server, and it's just so much, you know, push and pull with trying to get other individuals on board to use a tool that is very specific for R&D, but is currently working. So I think one of the issues that I'm having is trying to engage the other business side, the business side, to say, this is a tool that actually works.
I mean, I think that's probably a long answer to that question, but just in a nutshell, it made the most sense for us to seamlessly integrate with Microsoft Project, and also to, we really had the benefit of making the decision as a portfolio office and then being able to kind of dictate for the rest of the organization, which it sounds like maybe you're kind of fighting that battle. But for us, it comes down to just the capabilities, continuing to demonstrate the capabilities to get the buy-in. We have a couple of other areas in our organization that we're trying to move to, use some of the features of Project Server. And it's just been an ongoing, work to demonstrate specifically how they might be able to use it, and they've been receptive to it. So it wasn't a huge challenge for us in terms of making that decision and bringing other people in the organization on board.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate all the great input.
Thank you.